The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. A couple minutes after 8, Terry's out in the Applegate. Terry, you were telling me that, between ODF assessment and the fire district, what you're paying about $100 a month, $1,200 a year on the firefighting coverage, right?
I got my fire map paperwork, and 3 days or 4 days later, I got a new fire insurance update, the whole new packet, which I just got one last month for the year, and it is my insurance that almost doubled, mostly just for fire, on my house and my property. It doubled 4 days after I get this. So they can't tell me that this isn't affecting your insurance rates.
They insist, though, that the map has no effect on your insurance rates whatsoever. That's the state's point of view. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I think they're full of baloney.
Hmm.
And they know it. It's just another power grab for the state, and land grab, and property rights. That's the biggest thing. You know, I've been involved with Dave Honeycutt and his association since the beginning in the 80s when we started fighting all this. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. As long as the Democrats are in control, they want total power over your property and your land.
Okay, and I agree, though. Now, have you filed for your appeal? Have you filed those affidavits that we were talking about earlier?
I called Dave Honeycutt's office, and they said they'd have one of their attorneys because I've got four, and mine is in a trust. So I have to hire an attorney.
No, that you're talking about the appeal. I'm talking about the other stuff we were talking about doing a cease and desist on this, like Mr. X was talking about a few minutes ago. Are you doing the other things, or are you just applying for a appeal? I mean, you should apply for the appeal. I'm not questioning that.
Yeah. Well, I'll look into that cease and desist. I went to the big meeting in Grants Pass, and I was surprised that place was packed.
Yeah, I know.
I'll have to look into that cease and desist.
I would use every tool at your avail, and not just place all your trust into the attorney and the appeal process. Okay. Maybe there's a way you throw in. Yeah, I got to tell you, if all of a sudden the DOJ ended up getting 20,000. Cease and desist in there, you know, maybe it would, you know, apply some additional political pressure because it is a political question that we're talking about. Appreciate the call there, Terry. All right, we'll catch up on the rest of the news here in just a moment. And Dave Honeycutt joins me from the Oregon Association of Property Owners.
News this hour from Town Hall.
Weak temperatures today holding in the 30s.
All right, let's take a look at what is going on. Price of gold, oh my goodness, continues to pop up, popped up another $30 from yesterday. It was like 28.06, 28.12 or so when I was talking about it yesterday morning. Today, 28.36. So what Mr. Gold and Mr. Silver, and Mr. Silver, by the way, is at $32 an ounce. And what it's really indicating is they don't think that the Federal Reserve is going to have control over this. And same with the central banks. And that a lot of what is going on right now is inflationary in nature. Now, this is a good time to continue to tuck away some wealth-protecting dollars into physical or silver gold instead. Do that with J. Austin & Company Gold and Silver Buyers. They're my recognized experts and the people who I suggest that you check out there. A couple of locations. There's 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. That's by appointment. Call 482-3715, and Mark will go over there and get it all set for you. Nice little private appointment. Works really well. Or you can go to 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland. Great people know these markets, whether you're on the buying or selling. And they're helping the several thousand-year reputation of protecting wealth. Not being very exciting sort of stuff. It's not like you're looking at a Bitcoin go from 50 to 60,000 in a day, or in this case, I think it was like 105,000 and then dipping down to 90 or something like that. It's not about the trading of it and bigs up. It's about tucking it away and protecting wealth with Jay Austin, the recognized experts. Ashland Grants Pass, fortunereserve.com. Drop by the store today if you could.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
This is Brent with Home and Built Deck and Fence.
It's 9 ounces. It fits in the palm of your hand.
Quarter after 8, we're talking with Dave Honeycutt, the Oregon Property Owners Association. Been fighting these property intrusions for a long, long time, haven't you, Dave? Welcome to the show. Good to have you on.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, we've for almost 40 years now, we've been representing property owners in all 36 counties and every city in Oregon. So, yeah, it's a struggle here in Oregon.
Yeah. So there's more going on than Senate Bill 762. You put out an alert last week or some information on your website. What's your website again, for those that don't know?
www.oregonpropertyowners.org.
All right. That's pretty easy to remember. No problem there. But Herman and I and others have been talking about Senate Bill 762 and the fire mapping and the big public meetings we had last week, filing cease and desists and getting ready for the appeals and all the rest of it. But meanwhile, we have our, for lack of a friendly term, our friendly communists in Salem continuing to go with even more intrusions. What are we looking at right now?
Well, and I've been in that building, Bill, for almost 30 years. And in the almost 30 years that I've been there, I don't think I've ever seen a session where there are more bad ideas being kicked around than this one. So if you own property, own rural property, live in rural Oregon, want to live in rural Oregon, it's not a good time at the Capitol. There's really an attack on anybody that wants to do anything outside of town, which is scary.
But that, of course, is state policy. We know about it. The state is essentially operating under sustainable development rules and policies and the climate-friendly, equitable community. Now, you were in Salem yesterday because you were going to testify on a bill. And what was that all about? What was coming at us? If you were there, it had to be important.
Well, we had a bill yesterday that deals with, and actually this one is pretty minor. So we started off with an easy one, Bill. It dealt with battery charged fences. So that's not anything that most of your listeners are going to care about unless they own a business that is constantly being vandalized or their merchandise is constantly being stolen because it sits outside at night. At that point, then give me a call because those property owners are definitely be interested in this bill. But the bills that I think are really dangerous, Bill, are Senate Bill, the primary one is Senate Bill 79.
And what does Senate Bill 79 do, Dave?
Well, it essentially would eliminate the ability to rebuild homes that are lost to wildfire. And I think that part, if that bill moves at all, that part's getting amended out of it.
Now, there is specific laws right now in the state of Oregon that, in fact, I have a feeling that this is probably in reaction to the Alameda fire here in southern Oregon, in which you had the cities not wanting to, well, we don't want you rebuilding. We want you to rebuild sustainable development housing, affordable housing, or whatever the case might be, until they were thrown in their face was the Oregon law that says, listen, you start within a year and you can rebuild what you had. Is this kind of what's happening? Senate Bill 79 is about gutting that kind of protection?
It is, and in fact, we have a bill, Senate Bill 462, that we like quite a bit. It's either 462 or 464. There's so many bills out there that I have a hard time tracking all of them. But that bill will specifically allow in a quick time people to rebuild their homes if they need to replace them for whatever reason. But it's typically in Oregon, especially in southern Oregon, if you're going to have to replace your home, it's typically after some type of fire event. Our bill would create a quick process because, you know, you don't kick people when they're down. They're at their absolute lowest point. They've lost, in most cases, everything. And they need to be able to, the last thing they need is to get hassled by the Oregon land use system if they want to put their house back. So that's one of our bills. 79 would do essentially the opposite. It's dangerously written. It's tied to the wildfire maps. Now, I think the wildfire maps that I know have been so controversial down there, I think those wildfire maps are going to go away. We've been asking for a full repeal of the wildfire maps, and I think, and I'm being cautiously optimistic here, Bill, I think that's going to happen.
I hope you're right about that. But what I am looking at, though, in Senate Bill 79 is that it would take land and say that you couldn't put any new dwellings on any land if it meets any of the criteria. And any of the criteria describes practically everything in Southern Oregon. What identified as a high wildfire hazard within the WUI, right? In a groundwater restricted area, we have lots of that. Contains essential, limited, important, or irreplaceable wildlife habitat. I mean, everything. And also, what else here?
That's defined, by the way, Bill.
Oh, it is?
No, none of that's defined. We don't know what any of those types of wildlife habitat are.
Yeah, and by the way, they also have in a high priority wildlife movement or habitat connectivity area here. And of course, what are they building down here off of Interstate 5 is those wildlife overpass or underpasses or something like that. So if you have the unfortunate or the misfortune of having your land near those kind of things, right? You're in trouble then, right? That kind of thing?
Well, it is, and we also think that, Bill, the way they've worded it, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but the way they've worded that language, we think it also applies if you need to replace a home.
So you
already have an existing home and you need to replace it. We think this bill applies to replacement homes as well, which would be, of course, absolute disaster for people who already live rural. And it's just another effort. We've crunched the numbers, Bill, and we believe that if this bill were to pass, 5 out of every 6 homes in rural Oregon that are currently allowed would no longer be allowed.
On the article on your website, I'm looking at this piece. You had a diagram of Jackson County. And I think I'm going to have to take this picture and post it on my blog today here, too. The map of Jackson County is mostly covered with dark blue, and it's about, I would say, 80 to 85% of Jackson County would be considered no rural, absolutely off limits to any kind of development under Senate Bill 779. So this is truly almost like the linchpin of finishing up the lockup rewilding of Southern Oregon. Would that be what this is all about, in your opinion?
It is, and if you do post that map, Bill, if you take it, for people that go and look at it, the red areas, the few areas that are in red on that map where you can develop, a lot of those will be off limits as well once we get definitions of the irreplaceable wildlife areas, which, again, is undefined, but will ultimately, if this bill passes, have to be defined. So we think a lot of those red areas are going to be off limits as well. And the map of Jackson County is not atypical. We've seen maps of Wasco County, you know, up in the Dalles, that look just like Jackson County's. And I think what you'll see is when you go to look at the other counties, they're going to look just like that Jackson County map.
Dave Honeycutt with me this morning. Dave, who is the sponsor of Senate Bill 79? Do you know?
Well, it's a committee bill, which means it comes out of it's sponsored by the Senate Natural Resources Committee. But that's chaired by Senator Golden.
Okay. I just had to ask because he's coming on the show Thursday and we're going to have to ask him a few questions about this because it seems that everything bad that's trying to rip any kind of property right or ability to live outside of the actual cities seems to be sponsored by either Senator Golden or State Representative Pam Marsh. Is it just me? It just seems that way.
Well, I don't think Representative Marsh is behind any of this at all, but this is certainly Senator Golden. Senate Bill 79 is Senator Golden's legislation. And frankly, and I've expressed my concern to the senator about this bill, I think Senate Bill 79 for rural Oregonians is probably the biggest threat that I've seen in my years in the Capitol. It's a dangerously bad bill.
What is the so-called reason for this? Is this is there some idea that you having a homestead on your land out in the middle of nowhere is somehow going to stop the critters?
No, well, it's that. We value wildlife more than we value someone's right to do something as simple as building a house on their property.
Well, when wildlife starts paying property taxes, maybe we should be more concerned.
Well,
that's just me, but yeah, you know, I'm kind of like taking that Randy Weingarten thing with. Remember, she was not Randy Weingarten, but there was some AFA or a teachers union thing that's saying, well, why don't you guys care about the kids? Well, when the kids pay union dues, then we'll care, you know, about what they want. Yeah. Kind of like maybe we should do that when it comes to wildlife, too. Just kidding, but only half kidding. All right.
Well, yeah, it's one to keep an eye on, and we're working desperately hard at the Capitol. It's tough at the Capitol right now, but we're working desperately hard to try and stop that bill from happening. And, you know, we're working closely to make the wildfire program a lot better. And I think the first thing that we need to do to make the wildfire program better is just to repeal those maps.
Okay, I'm with you on that. I wanted to get your feel on the political tenor of the room, so to speak. I've been a big fan of the ability of the Senate, especially because it's easier to do, to get the Senate to walk out when stuff like this comes up there. And then they always come back and say, well, then we wouldn't be allowed to run for re-election. And it's just like, I'm wondering, Dave, what the heck did you get your seat for, if not to protect people when you see these kind of intrusions? What's your overall feel on the quorum power? And now they're trying to get rid of that, too, also.
Yeah, when that happened, I often told friends and other legislators, if I'm representing a district in eastern or southern Oregon, that may be the best possible way that I can represent the people in my district. And it sounds bad because, you know, we elect people to go to Salem and fight for our rights.
Yeah, but your job is not to sit there and pass Democratic bills like Senate Bill 79 or Senate Bill 762. And I swear that this reaching across the aisle thing, well, I have to be there. Got to be a warm seat in the House or Senate in order to get my deal through. I don't get it here, Dave. I'm really kind of perturbed by it all.
Well, I think at some point, Bill, I think that, it depends on how well you can make change. If you're capable of making change, which means the majority party has to be willing to entertain ideas and not just do a cram down, which seems to be sort of a lost art.
Yeah, but if they're going to do cram downs, then shouldn't Republicans be breaking the system rather than helping facilitate it? Because, you know, if you can't really get any kind of thing modified or really changed, you know, to actually help the situation, why not break it? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what they've been doing for a number of years, ever since they decided not to walk out or use quorum any longer, hasn't been working. Everybody's, oh, well, I voted no. Well, so what? You were there. You see what I'm getting at?
I do, and again, I think when those walkouts happened, I think in many cases that was, quite frankly, the best way to protect the constituents of the particular the particular district that the senator was representing, simply because there was no way that their voice was going to be listened to by the majority. It just it's a shame. I don't think it's what any of us want to see. And I remember back in the days where everyone's voice was heard in the Capitol, but those days have sort of come and gone.
Hmm. Talking with Dave Honeycutt.
It's tough.
Yeah. All right, Dave, I'm going to see someone's been holding on here. I think they wanted to ask a question or be on with you. Hi, you're on with Dave Honeycutt. Who's this?
Hey, Dave, Brad Bennington here. Good morning. Thanks for being on with Bill.
Hey, you bet.
Sure.
Good to have you on. What do you think, Dave? Or I'm sorry, Brad.
Yeah. So, Dave. Yeah. 79 tough sledding. 762 tough sledding. This what I wanted to ask you is it took us 19 years to bring an additional 4,000 acres into the Medford urban growth boundary. I mean, bringing new land in Oregon is just really Harry Potter stuff. In the last legislature, Jody Hack of the Oregon Home Builders Association, she also represents realtors and several other outfits, pushed hard for this Housing Accountability and Production Office, which is Senate Bill 1537. I haven't heard anything about this. So this created a brand new state level agency that had never existed before, but it's just gone dark. Is this going to create more buildable land? How is this going to help, or is it going to help? And how does it fit in the matrix of all these other bills that are making development harder in rural Oregon?
I really appreciate the question. Thank you, Brad. What do you know there, Dave?
Well, I was very supportive and still am of the Housing Accountability and Production Office, and marched up the hill and will always march up the hill with the home builders and Jody Hack on bills like that. The reason that nothing has happened on, we call it HAPO, it's the acronym. The reason that nothing's happened is because that office hasn't been fully set up yet. But the entire purpose of that office is to listen to complaints made by both property owners and builders who are trying to, you know, housing is it's a product. The builders provide a product that the public needs, and when cities, especially and the state, and especially certain cities, I can name them for you, decide that they want to make it hard for people to provide the housing that the public needs, the HAPA was created essentially to run roughshod over those cities and say, wait a minute, we have a housing shortage, we need more housing, and we are going to make it, we're going to step in and make sure that you stay out of the way of people that are trying to provide that product.
Would it be fair to talk about communities such as Ashland as being very resistant to...
They certainly have been in the past, Bill.
Yeah. In other words, they want more housing for the community, but elsewhere, right?
Well, unfortunately, Bill, what we've seen over the years especially is, and you would know this better than us on the north end of the state, as you've seen an influx of Californians into Oregon, they've brought their NIMBYism with them. And you know, they're okay if the house is built in a part of town that they can't see, but if it's right next door to them and somebody's building the exact same type of house that they just moved into, all of a sudden that's the end of the world.
Got it. All right. Hey, Dave, I appreciate you coming on here. So the fight is continuing on, and good to know that you're out there lobbying the state legislature and OregonPropertyOwners.org. So 79, the big one in this legislative session to watch. And what kind of pressure could be brought by listeners this morning to help out?
Well, what we're hoping is to that bill hasn't been scheduled for a hearing yet, and we're trying hard to make sure that it never goes anywhere. But what we're hoping is that you would contact the folks on that committee. It's the Senate Natural Resources and Wildfire Committee. Email them, be polite, but email them and tell them that you've got deep concerns with Senate Bill 79 and it's time to leave rural Oregon alone.
I mean, politeness sounds really good, but, does polite work?
I hear you.
Yeah.
And believe me, there are times when all of us down there want to scream at the top of our lungs, but I have not found it a very effective tool to try and get anything accomplished in that building.
All right. Very good. Dave Honeycutt, thanks for the talk. We appreciate it. We'll have you back. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
It's 8:33 at KMED.
Introducing Sweet February Favorites at
Arters and Sheet Metal Services. Visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Oregon E-Deals has unbeatable offers for you. Grab a $25 gift certificate to Artisan Bakery for only $18, perfect for fresh European-style pastries, or get a $25 Malello Coffee Roasters gift certificate, also just $15, for your coffee fix. Looking for some self-care? Get a $30 Skin Esteem certificate for only $10. Visit OregonEDeals.com and click the Metford link to score these deals.
I'm hooked on OregonEDeals.com. I'm saving big.
Hi, I'm Steve Potter, body shop manager at Lithia Body and Paint, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
8:41, we are big fans of local business. Without local business, we don't exist, and we're helping local businesses get with other local businesses. And so is Lisa McLeese Kelly. Couldn't make it in here today on Open for Business, but a couple of her people, of the members of Network in Action. We've been talking about this every couple of weeks the last the last few weeks, and even up to mid-December, I think, was when we first started talking about that. And joining me in studio, we have Jason Daly from Stone Heating and Air. How you doing, Jason?
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great to have you here, too. And we also have Dr. Emily Sander from the Well Integrative Medicine. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, great to have you both in there. Hey, I'll just start with you first, Jason. First off, if you can define, if someone says, okay, network in action, what does this mean? I'm going to continue to hit on this. And what is it, first off, and how has it helped you in Stone Heating and Air's world?
Huh? Sure, yeah. I've been involved in a couple different capacities over the last few years. Network in action really is about just connecting with like-minded individuals across the community, different businesses represented, coming from different areas of expertise. And it's all about just connecting with them, building relationships, because ultimately that's the foundation of a lot of the businesses here, especially small business.
Yeah, but it's not just sitting around and talking, I guess, right? There's a little more in-depth, I think, because there's been networking kind of got a bad name, if I want to say, back in the 90s or,
sure.
Well, hey, well, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to network, which was an excuse for going out and having coffee with everybody that you knew, you know, those kind of things. What kind of activities have you done?
One of my favorites that we did just recently, and we've kind of touched on it a couple times over the last few months, that I always kind of find interesting, is we just did a segment about AI and integrating it into your business and how that can be effective. We did different workshops within the meeting that talked about that, and, you know, hearing all the different perspectives of how different people are utilizing it in very different ways, you know, is always kind of eye-opening for me of how people are using these tools.
There are amazing ways to use artificial intelligence to automate certain tasks that you have, you know, kind of the drudgery task for a small business. I think that are going to be the successful local businesses will be the ones that can integrate that most effectively. Okay. Agree with you on that. So now then, how are things over at Stone Heating and Air here? I have to ask is everybody going crazy, like calling up and saying that their compressor just blew up in the cold weather? What's the story, huh?
Yeah, a lot of, as you can imagine, a lot of no heat calls the last couple of weeks, especially this week in particular. The snow's been a little crazy and has taken out some systems that are working overtime right now. So it's been a great week over there, nice and busy. So.
Yeah, you got to help them then as far as navigating the new services or the new getting new systems if you need. What kind of offers are out there from the state right now, Energy Trust and more?
Yeah, so there's quite a bit. The nature of our industry usually is reaction-based. It's, hey, my heater broke. I need a new one. I need to fix this or that. It's almost always out of the blue, unexpected expense. So one of the things that I try and do to help people navigate around this is maximize on rebates, tax credits, things of that nature. And a lot of those things I found people just aren't privy to. So part of my job is helping educate people on what's available to them.
So Jason does the work so the customer doesn't have to.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha. Now, that's once again Jason Daly from Stone Heating and Air, and it's Jason D at StoneHeatAir.com. And you're over on Rainbow Drive in Central Point, 855-5521 if you wanted to get in touch. And I'll put that information up here too. All right?
Perfect.
Good talking as always. Let me talk with Dr. Emily Sander here too. It is the Well Integrative Wellness Center, Siskiyou Boulevard, 1630 Siskiyou Boulevard, Suite B in Ashland, and 613-0011 for this. Now, it's an integrative wellness center, but you're doing it from a Christian perspective. Now, I'm kind of intrigued by this. And what is driving that, if you don't mind, Doctor? Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah. So when I was an emergency medicine physician during the pandemic, we had a lot of patients coming in that really were there for chronic disease and a lot of stress and emotional, spiritual issues. And I realized that our team basically came out of the regular system so that we could help patients in a different way. So that's how we opened the Well. We see patients, oftentimes they're dealing with cancer, difficult things, and they may need prayer. They want to feel open, you know, to talk to a provider that will support them in mind, body, and spirit. We're not here to push our beliefs on people, but we are here to support and love them in that way.
You know, that's interesting. It did, what did COVID teach, I think, many of the, I wouldn't say you're an are you an alternative therapist of some sort, or...
So I did an integrative medicine fellowship, a two-year.
And what is integrative, though? Maybe that's the question, really, I should be asking.
A lot of people ask that. So you are blending traditional medicine with other therapies. So you are making sure that you're giving the best approach for each patient. You're not doing it just based on the traditional Western model. You may be doing Western medicine, but they sometimes may need, you know, other things part of their protocol, acupuncture, you know, massage therapy, physical therapy, things like that.
Okay. And so you bring it all in there, but you're doing it from a Christian perspective. Does that turn some people off, though? I would just kind
of
wonder.
There's been some people that have come in and
by the way, I'm not saying I would be. I'm just like saying it's just all of a sudden, oh,
yeah.
You know, wait a minute. How science-based is this? Do you ever get that?
Yeah. Some people, when they come in, you know, they some are a little hesitant. But then once they meet our staff, they say that they have been to our clinic and is the most comfortable medical experience they've ever had. And so most all of our patients really enjoy our services.
So about the mind and the spirit, too.
Yes.
Would it be fair to say that in the traditional medical practice, the spirit is kind of ignored?
Yes. Very, very frequently, because a lot of your visits are very quick. And unfortunately, insurance is pushing you to get patients through as fast as you can. And so you don't really have the time to make a lot of connections that truly are needed to heal the patient.
I have jokingly referred to a lot of times, it's the primary care physician is your imaginary friend that gets to see you for 5 to 10 minutes a year. You know, that kind of thing. Other than that, it's a PA. Hey, you know, I want to have you come back here and talk about your book. You have an upcoming book here.
In the next
1 or 2 months. What's it called?
Reviving the Heart of Medicine.
Okay. And what are you hoping to accomplish with that? Now, I'll bring you back because I want a copy of that review it and see what you're up to.
But absolutely.
I'm always, this is thought provoking. This will be?
What had me write it is there is so much division in the medical field, and you are seeing that still throughout the pandemic and now, and a lot of providers are burned out and, you know, they are not functioning well. And so I really had it on my heart to write a book that was supporting not only healthcare providers, but anyone that felt like patients that really felt like they lost hope in medicine during the pandemic. So that's what the book's about.
I knew so many people during the COVID time that could not get any kind of alternative therapy without essentially going to the veterinary supply houses. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to kind of leave it at that. You know, I think people have heard me talk enough about it over the years to do this. Do you think we're getting past that at this point, or are we still having this top-down practicing of protocols rather than practicing of medicine?
So right now we are experiencing a monumental shift, and I believe that healthcare is going to start to open up to some things that have been blacklisted previously. And to me, I think it's very interesting because the scientific method has always been looking into different hypotheses. And right now, we've experienced as physicians that has been stopped. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, I'll get in touch with you. We'll book you about when the book comes out. I want to find out more about that. I'm looking forward to it. Jason, it is great talking with you too here. We appreciate you dropping in here from Stone Heating and Air. And we'll get all of your contact information up. And I know you probably got more work than you can handle at the moment. Just it's kind of the season here. And doctor, we will have you back. Before you take off here, I forgot to ask you, though, what has Network in Action done for you in your particular practice?
Yeah, so it has been amazing working with Lisa McLeese-Kelly and all the people in our group. It's really done a lot of good connections, and you get to know the other business professionals and really know how to refer people to them, what they need, how to support them. And you just realize how good of people you really are working with, and just really helps you connect and build other people's businesses while doing your own.
Well, we're hoping to try to connect a few people to you both, too.
Thank you.
Okay? Dr. Emily Sander and Jason Daly, we appreciate you both coming in on Network in Action. We'll get all that information up on KMED.com on my show blog. And thank you very much to you both, okay? It is 10 before 9 here. Like I had mentioned, Diner 62 Real American Quiz is next. If you wanted to be in on this, 770-5633. $20 gift certificate. All we have to do is just answer a little bit of history. And we'll have some fun with that coming up.
As a business owner, you likely do a lot of driving around town, so
Clouser.
Visit ClouserDrilling.com.
Welcome to the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Give Bill a call at 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Last Friday, you know, Diner 62 always has a breakfast delivered to me. This is my dog in the fight. And they always deliver something delicious. And last week, it was that half ham special for $11.15. And you know, when you see the ham steak, it's about the size of your head. Well, they give you half of that, and you get the great taties, and you get the wonderful scrambled eggs and all the other fixins and things. and it is absolutely delicious. It's well worth a breakfast for you. 11:15 Monday through Friday. They only do that, though, 6 to 9 during the weekdays, okay? And also extended through Valentine's Day, the hot open-faced sandwiches. And you can choose the pot roast sandwich with mashed potatoes or hot turkey sandwich with mashed potatoes, gravy, and cranberry sauce. A little bit of the holiday hanging on with you, okay? I don't know who is here. We're just going to hit the phones and see who wants to win at D62. Hi, good morning. Who is this?
Good morning, Bill. This is Todd.
Todd, we're talking about today in history. It is today in history. February 4th, 1861. A bunch of states got together to form the Confederacy. Delegates from South Carolina, Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana got together to establish the Confederate States of America. Now, as early as 1858, Todd, the big conflict brewing between the North and the South over the issues of slavery, and I would also add tariffs. The South was concerned about tariffs on imports, leading Southern leadership to discuss a unified separation from the United States. Now, by 1860, the majority of the slave states were publicly threatening to secede if the Republicans, the anti-slavery party, ended up winning the presidency. All right, so following Abraham Lincoln's victory over the Democratic Party in 1860, South Carolina immediately started to secede. December 20th, it passed that ordinance. After the declaration, South Carolina set about seizing forts, arsenals, and other strategic locations within the states. And within 6 weeks, five more southern states had followed. Where did the delegates get together to establish the Confederacy? Where was it? This is the big burning question this morning for the Diner 62 quiz win, Todd. Was it A, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, B, Charleston, South Carolina, C, Atlanta, Georgia, D, Montgomery, Alabama, or was it E, Jackson, Mississippi? What do you think?
Straight Charleston.
I'm going to say Charleston. That sounds very Confederacy, right? No. It's not this time, but I appreciate you trying. Let me go to line two. Hi, who's this?
This is Mike.
Mike. So it wasn't Charleston. Where did they get together to plot the Confederacy? Was it Baton Rouge, Atlanta, Georgia, Montgomery, or Jackson, Mississippi?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia. No, it wasn't Georgia either. It would have been a great guess. I had no idea where they actually got together to do this, which is why we're continuing here. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Hello?
This is Tom.
All right, Tom. Baton Rouge, Montgomery, Alabama, or Jackson, Mississippi. Where do they get together?
We're going to go with Jackson, Mississippi.
Is it Jackson, Mississippi? No. We're still going down. We're going to go to line four. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Joel.
Hi, Joel. Joel, that means you got to talk. Baton Rouge or Montgomery? What do you say?
Montgomery.
Montgomery. Joel, you won.
You're a winner!
So you may have crappy cell service out there in the Iron Gate, but at least we got you a Diner 62 quiz certificate, okay? Isn't that great?
Thank you.
Okay. Hang on here just a minute. Yep. Six seceded states, they met in Montgomery to establish the government. By the way, by the time Lincoln was inaugurated, Texas had joined the Confederacy, and federal troops held only Fort Sumter in South Carolina. Little side note there. It is 8:57 and change.
As a business owner, you likely do a lot.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. And emails of the day as we wrap up the show this morning. And emails of the day are sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant. Great people. In fact, they're working with me. And if you need any specialty equipment, water picks, special brushes, mouthwash, toothpaste, they have a special kiosk. Even if you haven't gone there before, they'll sell it to you all at cost. They want to make sure you have the best in dental care, and having the good tools helps. I ended up getting a water pick the other day from them, and it's working great. All right. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. 9 o'clock, and I wanted to give an email of the day to Hans Albuquerque about the fear over the tariffs right now. And this was written on Sunday, and it's a little bit different now, but he says, so the markets in the swamp are trembling at thoughts of tariffs. Dow Jones down big time. A Pentagon comptroller family member is very concerned this week over the backwash. Let's remember, In the Dawn's last dance, he slammed a 25% tariff on import steel and 10% on aluminum. He hammered foreign washing machines and a bunch more. The result, GDP was up 4.2% in 2017 and 5.2% in 2018. This past year, 2024, GDP was only up 2.8%. Tariffs are the new drones this week. Don't fall for it, patriots. All right, Hans, I appreciate your writing. The Reverend David writes me this morning. He emailed me. He says, Bill, I just heard you mention Ron Wyden. Yeah, Ron Wyden was on this morning doing his Thuffer and Thuckatash Act, bagging on RFK Jr., who, by the way, apparently has been passed out of committee and they'll be going to a vote for him. But he said something about RFK, and I think that I just heard him make one of the dumbest statements ever, David says. He said that Trump and RFK want to take life-saving abortion care away from women. I ask, what the hell is life-saving abortion care? It seems to me that with abortion, someone always dies. I appreciate your writing there. Robert writes and says, Bill, I learned something about USAID, United States Agency for International Development, that makes the hysterical outrage over its demise comical. Aside from the fact that U.S. taxpayers have funded some of the most outlandish boondoggles in foreign nations via that agency, it wasn't authorized by Congress. Keep in mind that executive orders are made and removed at presidential whim. USAID sprang into existence by an EO issued by President John F. Kennedy. A lot of people don't know that, Robert, and thanks for making that. President Donald Trump is completely within his executive power to wipe it away with the stroke of his pen. All the whining and wailing is for naught. None of these so-called public servants bemoaning, eliminating the wasteless, useless spending that was USAID, had no problem with Joe Biden cleaning the slate of nearly every executive order issued during Trump's first term. Said pinheads know nothing of which they speak, or they are bold-faced liars. Either way, they are to be ignored. Kissing USAID goodbye is just the beginning of draining the swamp. The mandate voters gave the president last November, Mr. Trump keeps his word, something other Republicans need to emulate. Thank you very much, Robert. The email, Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. We'll talk more about things on Wheels Up Wednesday. You be well. See you then.